Yes, hello everyone. Welcome to an official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast to get you through the international week in the Isuzu Ute A-League. David Wiener with you once again to walk through what there's plenty still to talk about with the Socceroos in the midst of World Cup qualifying and the Olderoos playing some friendlies as well. And there's nowhere else to begin but with a review of the Socceroos 7-0 win against Bangladesh, which featured no less than four goals from Isuzu Ute A-League stars.
That threads it through. It's Brandon Borrello yet again. And they've done so through Jamie McLaren. And you know who pounced, the best striker in A-League history.
Yeah, a big opening to World Cup qualifying for the 2026 FIFA World Cup from Graham Arnold's side on the night that he became the record holder for the most games in charge of the senior national side. Joined today by David Davidovic and Tom Smithies as ever to discuss this. 7-0 win at Amy Park, gents. Jamie McLaren with a hat-trick. Mitch Duke with a brace. Brandon Borrello and Harry Soutar with the goals. Tom Smithies, to you first. Your first impressions of the Socceroos on the road to the 2026 World Cup.
Well, I was going to say they hit the ground running, but they kind of hit the ground heading with Harry Soutar's very, very early set-piece conversion to calm any nerves that might have been. It's interesting chatting to Craig Goodwin from Kuwait, and he made the point that they've spent the last, basically since the beginning of the World Cup, they've been playing teams that they don't have much of the ball from and they have to react to. And suddenly they're having to revert back to taking the initiative, having the bulk of possession, going for the jugular, etc. And it's quite a different mindset. And I think they did that very well. I think there was a real sense of we want to own the occasion, we want to give the fans a bit of a treat, and we want to send a bit of a message to the rest of the group. And seven goals did that. So I think all in all, it was a pretty satisfactory night.
I concur. It was a perfect start for the Socceroos. Bangladesh admittedly weren't amazing. Had a few holes defensively that the Socceroos exposed, but look, really positive and really extraordinary when you consider the turnover from the Qatar 2022 World Cup. I mean, a year ago it pretty much kicked off, and I think if you look at the Argentina game as an example, I think five, maybe six of the starters starting against Bangladesh the other night, and another one coming on. So a lot of turnover, and I know you love your depth charts, Dave. There's plenty of depth emerging in this Socceroos squad, which is really positive looking at the broader World Cup qualification campaign heading into 2026.
Well, that's right, because at the moment you'd expect in a group I with Palestine, Lebanon and Bangladesh, the Socceroos will cruise past this period, this passage, but it is a time to get a look at a lot of the contenders over the course of the next couple of years. I mean, if you think back and try and name the World Cup qualifying squad from the Socceroos at the start of the last cycle, let alone the team that took part in Qatar, I mean, there is so much change and there's so much opportunity, and that's the exciting thing for fans is watching on and seeing how that evolves. But Tom, the interesting part right now is having a look at who gets the inside running, who has started off in this journey, and to be quite bullish, that there are some good options. The Socceroos do look in probably a ruder health than they might have been when Graham Arnold took over, a couple of years back before Qatar.
Well, the interesting thing for me was watching the reaction of, say, Jamie McLaren. If you look at the breakdown of the squad, over the last year, there's been a lot of work done on renewing the goalkeeping, the defence and the midfield. But it was the average age of the strikers was significantly higher than the rest of the squad. It was like the one area where, Maturi obviously got his debut, Cassini Yenge's had a debut. So they're starting to look at fresh options now. This is almost the last bit of the squad to get overhauled. But the funny thing is, people like Mitch Duke and Jamie McLaren are refusing to cede. Mitch Duke's now got as many goals. If he's given the first goal against New Zealand, which, the referee said was his, statistician say was Harry Soutar's, but if he gets that goal, it's his most productive season ever at 30-odd. And Jamie McLaren comes off the bench at halftime, scores a classic Jamie McLaren hat-trick, as if to prove, hold on a minute, we've got the kids, but we can still do this. And given that Mitch Duke has fought long and hard for recognition, he won't be giving up anytime soon. So the interesting thing to answer your question is there is depth, but a lot of that depth is coming from the existing players going, we're not moving aside.
Yeah, and there's potentially more players that'll be knocking on the door. I mean, you can't rule out someone like Adam Taggart, who has shown really positive form at the start of this A-League season, scored a few goals. I mean, he was heavily involved in the last campaign, for instance. But I guess even if you expand beyond to other parts of the field, someone like Masluongo, who I think most people ruled a line through, comes back into the fold playing fantastic football in the Championship. Unfortunately, couldn't break his penalty duck. But, we kind of forget he was the player of the tournament at the 2015 Asian Cup, and it was at Amy Park, or shall we say Melbourne Rectangular Stadium, where he made his debut or start for the Socceroos, where most people expected Mark Bresciano to start. So he's an interesting one. He's, still at a good age, playing good football. So all of a sudden there's, a lot of depth and that balance of age to Tom's point.
There's an interesting one as well, that if you look at who was missing in that squad from the weekend, injuries and other reasons, Riley McGree, World Cup squad, Aidan Hrustic, who is probably on the outer at the moment, judging by Graham Arnold's comments due to match minutes over in Italy. Martin Boyle, still nursing an injury back. He will join with the squad in Q8. Matt Leckie, obviously coming back from injury. Awel Mabil. So there are, to Tom's point about the strikers, the experienced strikers, there's still experienced cavalry that will be saying, wait a minute, we've still got a role to play in this campaign going forward. And Luongo is an interesting one. I want to just expand a bit further on Tom. Do you think Aramoah's retirement, because Luongo has come back in from the cold, there is a really good bunch of midfielders, young midfielders, but outside of Jackson Irvine and now probably Backers, who's established himself, they're all kind of jostling for positions in the squad. You know, Jean Rose in and out, Devlin's in and out, Aidan O'Neill's just come back in, Metcalf's just establishing himself. Do you think that age profile, that squad profile, is the reason why maybe Luongo, in addition to the fact that he's warranted it through his form in the Championship, has been brought back in for the start of this campaign?
I know that there was a line of thinking that players who come in, really, we want to, if we're going to spend time with a player, it's got to be a player who's likely to play at the next World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's already concern that a number of the existing players may struggle. And therefore, someone like Luongo has been in terrific form since going to Ipswich, but would not be one for the future in that sense. And so there was, if we're going to put time into a player, it would be into what a player in his 20s, you might get a decade out of. But then, exactly as you say, the retirement of Aramoah and the confirmation of the disappearance of Tom Rogic create an opening for an experienced hand. And I think also the game against Mexico in particular, maybe Arnie realised they got ahead of themselves a little bit. 2-0 up, took off all the senior players and the young guys in front of a frenetic crowd. I wouldn't say panicked, but they lost their heads a little. They lost their structure, most importantly. And if you think about, we complained about, for instance, Amana Way in the qualifying for the 2022 World Cup. They were a goal up with 5 minutes to go. They should have been able to manage that game, and they didn't. And I think having people who can manage a game and have a quiet word, that kind of thing, suddenly becomes a little bit more valuable. And so Luongo is the beneficiary of a few factors there. But ultimately, as you said, well-deserved because of his form for Ipswich.
And Connor Metcalf's growing to that area of the park too, Dave. And also it helps having a club combination there with Jackson Irvine too. It's an interesting period of qualifying where, yes, the teams are weaker. You get moments like Harry Soutar where physically and aerially Australia is too strong. But we are going to have moments over the next year or two where teams are going to sit back, say, we're not going to beat you unless you break us down. And then your creative players, that front third, it does allow that part of the side to really evolve.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, back on Luongo, I mean, 45 caps, 6 goals, that's nothing to be sneezed at. That's, to have that experience coming in, especially to, to Tom's point around losing Moy and Rogic, who also was, a mainstay up until, only what, a couple of years ago, less than a couple of years ago. I think that's, that's really shrewd from Graham Arnold and the Socceroos coaching staff. I think you can, obviously we all love seeing young players come through the system, but, ultimately you need to have that, that balance. So, it's not so much about, the broader performance, Bangladesh 7 goals. It's about, the individuals and, discovering individuals getting that confidence. And Jamie McLaren, scoring that hat-trick, that'll do his confidence wonders as an example. Connor Metcalf, you know, playing regularly over at Sao Paulo. So I envision by the time we get to sort of, you know, 20, late 24, 25, that it's Graham Arnold going to have a lot of selection headaches.
Colin Metcalf's a really interesting one, and I think symptomatic of how suddenly you can have a player who makes a leap forward that you maybe weren't expecting. A cheap plug here for a feature that I just done on Jackson Irvine at St. Pauli, talking to the president there. But he was very effusive about Colin Metcalf as well and the change in him over the last year and how he's working with the coaches there, working with Irvine, working with the senior players around him, the way he's come on, adapted to a new role. And suddenly he's offering Arnie a great deal of different options that weren't there before. He's not just a number eight. He can play wide out right. He can play off the main striker. And he did it very effectively. And I think he is, when you're looking at that squad progression, you can chart it out and say, we expect this player to get to this point, but then suddenly a player makes a little leap forward. And that's particularly pleasing because then that suddenly really does increase your depth.
And it's the different styles they offer as well. You know, like you've got some long-range threats there with Luongo, who of course scored that opener in the Asian Cup final in 2015. Got overshadowed a little bit by James Troisi's winner. But, you know, Metcalf can play as an inverted winger. So it's not just having, you know, five or six midfield options. It's five or six different midfield options.
Yeah, that profile point is an interesting one. That's why I was so interested in the Yenge selection, because he clearly brings a different characteristic to the striking cohort that isn't in the current mix, wasn't in the veterans who've been maybe moved on, and brings a physical presence that we probably haven't quite got there. So that looks really good. A couple other things I want to just discuss: the back end of the park. Of course, Jordy Boss looking very comfortable marauding down the left flank. Lewis Miller getting the nod on the right. Now, it's interesting. We have now some options at right back, but no one that's gone, it's mine. And also, I think, Tom, there's also a bit of horses for courses too. Do we need to get up and down? Do we need to hold a bit firm? Want to ask about Lewis Miller on the right and the defensive balance as well.
And the interesting thing is Lewis Miller did himself a lot of good in some ways over the last couple of camps, but I thought his delivery was poor against Bangladesh. And, you know, McLaren does score goals with his head. His movement is excellent. You can put the ball on his head. Mitch Duke obviously scores and did score with his head, but there were Martin Boyle chatting to him for Soccer with Media over in Kuwait, and he made a joke that he'd been talking to his club mate Miller and said, you should have had seven assists, not one. And he did have a lot of opportunities to put the ball in. And so I think he didn't make that unarguable claim on that right-back spot. The interesting thing from Jordy Boss's point of view is that, you know, he ends up getting pushed into the left wing and just showing how adaptable he is and how that team can potentially move around and adjust within a game to, you know, they could almost play. I know Arnie talked years ago of playing with lopsided fullbacks like Germany did, you know, have one fullback who essentially spends most of the game at the winger. And suddenly Jordy Boss is offering that level of sophistication. So it's particularly interesting, but the right back position, I think, remains one to watch.
And the right back position was the, I guess, problem position slash the big question mark in Qatar, wasn't it? That was the one that really went down to the wire. Atkinson was in there. Then we had, Karacic in there as well. So Deganek, played there too. So, you know, I think that's another one that, probably will. I think there'll be a lot of changes in that right back position throughout the course of this campaign. But Jordy Boss, off the back of his first season at Westerlo in Belgium, you know, he's continues to improve. There looks like they might be in a relegation scrap. So I think, you know, this will be a bit of a PhD for the boy this season. So I think by the time we get to 2025, I mean, Aziz Bache is obviously in the veteran years, but still going really, really strong. But, you know, Jordy Boss is looking fantastic for that left back spot.
Speaking of at the World Cup, do you guys remember where we were this time last year? That just dawned on me right now, the 20th of November. We might have been recording this, probably having an espresso in the middle of the souk in Doha.
Nudging Tom and trying to wake him up.
Well, conversations with you, my friend.
And here we are a year on. Now, someone that was starring in Doha was Harry Suter. Now, he thought from there great things would come in clubland. I want to just finish off by discussing Graham Arnold's man management of Harry Suter. The way he is lifting him in every press conference and the way Harry Suter talks about it. Suter is playing more regular minutes for his national team than he is for his club. which does kind of go against the grain of what Graham Arnold said at every press conference, that game time is one of the key ingredients of selection. Dave, what do you make of that approach? But it, you know, with the caveat of Harry Soutar for the national team is just, particularly in this phase of qualifying, another breed.
Yeah, shrewd from Arnie. I mean, he's the one that's got Harry Soutar into the system, you know, very much his find, if you like, you know, having been born and raised in Scotland. But he's been a very, very good player. I mean, he was integral to the Ollie Roos qualifying for the Tokyo Olympics. You know, he was so important for the Socceroos in the lead-up to and during Qatar 2022. I'm really surprised that he's not, you know, playing more at Leicester. But yeah, this is where the national team, and this isn't exclusive to Australia. There's a number of national teams, you know, in a similar vein where there might be players who are out of favour with their club, but they're trusted by their national team and their national team coach. I think it's very, very clever, very shrewd by Graham Arnold. And without these national team games, I mean, it would be a real challenge for him. So, you know, hopefully he can find a solution in January, you know, if not the end of the season.
And I think the loyalty factor as well is shouldn't be underplayed, in the sense that the effort that Soutar put in to be fit for the World Cup and pushed himself to the brink, went and played so magnificently on the back of, what, 2.5 games or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That goes a long, the memory of that goes a long way, because, you know, Soutar didn't grow up here. He'd come into the squad a couple of years before, so popular within that squad. And I think that guts him a lot of slack. And I think you're right, Dave. The hope is that this exposure will earn him a loan move or whatever it is in January, and then he'll be playing, and then it becomes a moot point.
A little bit of it, and you know, there's different rules for every circumstance. There's probably less depth at centre-back than, say, there is in those attacking positions. Probably Hrustić is not, he's also not playing and he's not in the squad. A different message has gone to him. But I suppose in that instance, you know, over the last, well, probably 18 months, the side has shown an evolution since relying so heavily on Hrustić in World Cup qualifying for the last World Cup. Do you see him still playing a big role at all, guys, coming back in? Because in that period, you know, if you go beyond, say, the Peru qualifiers and earlier than that, he was so important on the road to Qatar. I mean, he was arguably our top class player in that period, Dave.
There's absolutely a spot for Aidan Hrustić moving forward, because he's got that X factor that very few players do in the Socceroos. He can create that moment of magic. Again, we're having lost Tommy Rogic and Aaron Moy. They were kind of in a similar vein. You know, Hrustić with that fantastic left foot, that confidence, you know, almost arrogance. And we unfortunately saw it only fleetingly at the 2022 World Cup because of his race against the clock with injury. But, you know, he came on late against, you know, Argentina, and, you know, with maybe a bit more match fitness, you know, a few more minutes under his belt, he potentially makes a far bigger difference. But he didn't give a stuff, you know, that it was Argentina. He was demanding the ball, and he's got that real confidence and, yeah, you know, ability from set pieces. So I don't think you'd rule a line through. He's pretty young as well. He's mid-20s. So, you know, he's got plenty of years left in him.
And, Tom, just before we finish off, you were on calls overnight with the media pack chatting to Craig Goodwin and Martin Boyle. That content is out on keepup.com.au. Are you expecting changes for the second game of World Cup qualifying?
Yeah, to start with. And then I think if the game goes according to plan, there'll be more changes. They deliberately took off players like Jackson Irvine at halftime against Bangladesh to save them for this second game. I think Martin Boyle, be amazed if he doesn't start, such an important player, didn't come back to Australia for the first game against Bangladesh because he had a swollen knee and decided that a long-haul flight was the last thing that he needed. But he says he's raring to go for the Palestine game. He's desperate to get back out there. So I think he's going to come into the equation. I'd be surprised if he doesn't start. And I think someone like, again, depending on how the game goes, they've probably put out a strong side to start with. But if they get early goals, they'll be looking to give someone like Yenge more minutes than he got, actually give him more than just a cameo, because, you know, this is it, really. The Asian Cup is in January. There may be a friendly in the build-up to the Asian Cup, but that will be very much a tweak, the final 11 to start the Asian Cup. It's not going to be testing any players out. So if we get early goals, I think they'll be looking at the second half, the opportunity to test out a few players.
Anyone you're keen to see, Dave?
Sammy Silvera. didn't feature the other night. I'd like to see him in action. He's, you know, he's come on in leaps and bounds over the last couple of years. And Yenge, just more of Yenge. He's a really interesting one. He's kind of, I don't feel we ever saw his full potential in the A-League, but he's, you know, life at Portsmouth got off to an absolute flyer. I think he's got enormous potential and, again, very different to any of the current striking options we have.
I don't know if you remember, Tom, I was sitting next to you at a Sydney derby at Allianz last year and we were talking about Yenge, and I think I said something like, man, if he can bag a hatful of goals, he is going to be unstoppable. And about 5 minutes later, he tore through and scored the match winner in that derby and made that epic celebration. I was like, well, okay, so maybe there's plenty more of that to come. So let's hope we see that.
You picked it.
Well, yeah, inadvertently, or was more like if he's got that. And boy, yeah, he showed that he had that, and he's gone and taken that to the next level abroad, which is fantastic to see. So confirming that second World Cup qualifier, 1 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, Wednesday morning. So if you're up late and partying on Tuesday night, well, then you can call it Tuesday night, but it's 1 a.m. Wednesday morning, Socceroos against Palestine, Jabhat al-Ahmad International Stadium in Kuwait. Now, while we're talking about depth, guys, part of the conversation is, of course, the Oliveroos, and it's great to see them playing at the same time and with so many either A-League players in the squad or players we're so familiar with, having talked about on this very show over the last couple of seasons. It was a 2-1 win for Tony Vidmar's side against Qatar in Saudi Arabia in a friendly. Mohamed Touré and Lachlan Brooke, the goal scorers. Now, these are all key bits of preparation as they get ready for the 2024 AFC Under-23 Asian Cup in April, as they look to get one of the coveted spots at the Paris Olympics. This squad, Dave, it's a really interesting, healthy-looking squad, bringing with players who are getting minutes here and who have also graduated from our local scene.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that even Oliveroos squads that were picked, there were so many players that were not playing regularly for their clubs, be it home or abroad, and that's very much changed. I mean, there are one or two that aren't regulars, but it's, you know, an exception rather than the rules these days. And Young Beach, as an example, who was in goals for the Oliveroos, the Melbourne City backup goalkeeper, is an example. But otherwise, I mean, you look at the starting lineup and even the, you know, players coming off the bench, I mean, they're all regulars, which is, you know, which is really important. But yeah, really important games and a positive result for the Oliveroos. Mo Touré and Lachie Brooks scoring, and Mo Touré, I mean, if you haven't seen it, worth a watch. I mean, just an unbelievable turn of pace to lose his marker from a standing start and smash the ball into the back of the net, and then a very composed finish by Lachie Brooks. So, yeah, positive signs for Oliveroos coach Tony Vidmar.
I think the interesting thing is that it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the money that Qatar was spending on youth development and how their youth teams were blowing ours away and their players were more technically advanced, bigger, whatever. And then there's just been this shift over the last 2 or 3 years where the youth teams are playing increasing numbers of tournaments and strong friendlies and doing well at all of them. And suddenly you've got that sense of, oh, there's a pipeline here. And this is something we can celebrate as opposed to being maybe fearful of the other Asian countries spending more. They're catching up. They're going past us at certain levels. To see the composure of some of these guys. I mean, the lovely finish from Lachie Brooke with the pass from Adrian Segesic for it. Is the mark of someone who's got rhythm, game time, is enjoying himself, seems to be enjoying himself in Europe, on loan from Sydney FC. And these guys starting to feel like they believe. And it gives us watching a sense that that those teams believe that they belong at that level.
And when you talk about the importance of national teams, Marco Tilio coming off the bench, very important for him. He's moved to Celtic in the off-season in what we believe still is the record outbound A-League transfer, yet to feature for the first team at Celtic. He's had some injury challenges, but manager Brendan Rodgers has also spoken about how difficult he's found it to adapt to the, you know, the change of pace over there. So that'll do him a world of confidence, Marco Tilio coming on, and could potentially start in the next game, you suspect. And of course, no Iran Kunda in this squad either, so not a bad player to potentially come into the mix in coming months, getting into the Olympics.
That's right. Now, Brendan Rodgers said it's just time. They were critical comments, but comments that suggest he's going to give him the time to bed himself in and find his feet at Celtic. We're going to do an activity over the next couple of months, gents. We're going to go deep into the Socceroos depth chart. There's no doubt about that because it's a fun activity. But no Aaron Kunda and no Garen Kuol in either of these discussions yet. And you've got to think either in the road to either Paris, the Asian Cup, the next World Cup. There's some of the exciting names that are going to come into contention in here as well. For those listening as well, keepup.com.au's got the highlights. It's got the match report. It's got the key information you need about both the Oilers and the Socceroos. But the local players, Brooke, of course, Callum Talbot, Patrick Beach, who you mentioned, Dave, Lucas Moragas from Newcastle Jets, Kai Truen from Brisbane Roar, Rafael Borges Rodriguez, who's been so impressive for MacArthur, and Mark Natta for Newcastle Jets, while Noah Boddick, Ryan Teague and Nishan Volupalai all came off the bench. So really positive there for the Oilers as they look to go forward. Which brings us, gents, to our next topic. Now, what we are looking at in the both the Isuzu A-League and the Liberty A-League this year, we've got what's called the Next Gen Tracker. We are looking at the top five players who were 21 or under at the start of the season. If you're looking for the Liberty A-League ones to watch, they were discussed on the Dub Zone by the Dub Zone panel. That is on aleagues.com.au. You can get the top five discussion there. And, gents, we have been handed the baton to look at the Liberty ones to watch for the A-League men. Yeah, the responsibility here of casting the crystal ball through the top five players 21 or under at the start of the season. So I wonder how unanimous we're going to be. It's a good discussion to have off the back of the Oilers and off the back of talking about some positivity in the A-League ranks. We will jump on aleagues.com.au and you can get the list of under 21 players who were in contention and some data around our reasoning. Can we start with some unanimity?
Unanimity.
Is there any argument over the player who gets the number one spot in this top five, gents? And should we work backwards from there? Does a red card do any damage to Nestori Aaron Kunda's candidature, Dave, for the top five, top billing of under 21's next gen ones to watch?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so. I'm not sure if everyone would agree, but look, I mean, off the back of him getting a, you know, signing off on that extraordinary transfer to Bayern Munich, $1.75 million. Thankfully, we'll see Aaron Kunda here for the rest of the season before he moves to the Bavarian Giants. But look, it was a blip. The kid's, you know, obviously going to have to, you know, work on a few things in terms of his composure. But no, not at all. I mean, he's an immense talent. He's back from his one-game suspension. Look forward to seeing him play this weekend. And I think he's just going to go from strength to strength this season. I was surprised that he wasn't picked in any of the Australian squads, particularly the Oilers squad, I guess, for this window. But it's probably a bonus for Adelaide United in that, you know, he's been at home, you know, train hard, and he'll be ready to go this weekend.
The red card just adds to the allure, doesn't it? It adds the passion, the drama, the commitment. I mean, he does have some emotional regulation issues to control, but for God's sake, he's 17. I mean, most teenagers are full of, yeah, you know, testosterone and all sorts of hormones, and they can't, you know, speaking as the father of some, they're not always the best at regulating their emotions. And we're expecting him in front of how many thousand people at any park, and he's getting kicked to Kingdom Come, and which is what's going to happen to him through his whole career, and we're expecting him to turn around and sort of nod meekly. I think there's a lot to be said for you know, cutting someone of his age a bit of slack and saying, let's enjoy the talent and work around the edges rather than concentrate on, you know, a mistake you made.
And Dave, we had a great discussion about it last week, and you know, I think Tom raised a good point around, you know, Carl Viet perhaps should have taken him off earlier. He had 15,000 fans, you know, really, you know, getting stuck into him off the back of his role in the Miranda red card. You know, it was great theatre. He could have protected him, but you know what? In my mind, it's like, good on Carl Viet. He's given the kid the experience. Obviously, he's, you know, the blood's boiled over. He's got the red card. But, you know, hopefully that is a great learning experience for him. And, you know, we saw a bunch of the players and some of the opposition, you know, including Tony Popovich, the Victory coach, get around him. So, you know, hugely educational. And he'll be exposed to these kinds of, you know, environments, in different ways, but high-pressure environments overseas. So by the time he leaves at the end of the season, you know, with over 50 games under his belt, you know, double-digit goals, plenty of assists, some, you know, an amazing highlights reel, you know, one or two red cards and a few controversies, I think he'll be, you know, he'll be ready for Europe.
I agreed. It was a discussion, should Kyle Viet have taken him off? And the more I've thought about it as well, I think this will be part of the making of Nestorio Rincón. We look back and go, he was able to learn from that experience. And in fact, Kyle Viet was almost doing him a favour, exposing him to that level of tension, which he's now going to go off and have to experience week in, week out. We know that the German giant, Bayern Munich, are watching his every move. There is talk that, you know, if he hits a certain quota, he will be training with the first team squad over there, which is incredibly exciting, and watching him on A-League's All Access. And if you haven't, I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has watched A-League's All Access. The steely resolve that he speaks with, I listened to the full interview that was recorded in addition to what went out as well. And the steely resolve that he speaks with, the focus, the mentality, you can see, yes, he's 17, but there's a professional sportsman 17 as well. And you can tell he has now got this razor sharp focus on what he's about to go set off and do.
Hmm. On that point, Dave, my understanding is that he will be training with the Bayern first team when he gets there. He'll be there for, you know, at least a few months. So he will have every opportunity to break into that Bayern first team. It's not too dissimilar to the deal that was done for Alphonso Davies, correct? So, you know, extraordinary to think, and he's not the first and won't be the last Aussie to sign for a big club, but they are seriously looking at him as part of their first team plans. So, you know, this time next year, he could be playing in the Bundesliga.
And remember, with Alphonso Davies, again, not from a traditional football powerhouse, a Canadian, an Australian.
Correct.
And went across on a similar deal and just took their breath away. So not getting ahead of ourselves, but this is a genuine opportunity for Nestorio Rincón to build over the next couple of months into that move over there. Tom, final discussion on Rincón, because that happened post our podcast last week. Just want to contextualise this for our audience as well. I mean, obviously we had Garan Qualstein with Newcastle and then go out on loan last week. We've had players sign, Pavlicic has signed for Bayern as well from Central Coast Mariners over the last little while. We've got a stack of players who've gone to the championship. But this deal and this move and also the hype around Rincón, it does feel like it's caught everyone's attention, not just beyond the football circles here in Australia, but there was a lot of eyeballs on the A-League's accounts last week. There were a lot of people looking globally. Who is this kid that Fabrizio Romano is commenting about on social media, that Bayern Munich have plucked from Australia? It felt different last week. It felt like a move of big gravitas and huge endorsement.
Well, it was interesting to look around and see who picked it up, and a lot of the English press did. You know, this was Bayern Munich signed a lot of players, and they signed a lot of teenagers, and lots of big clubs signed a lot of teenagers, and rarely do they get this level of coverage. And I think that the hype has escaped the borders of Australia, and people have started to see the highlights reels and go far out. Like every time you see one of Aaron Connor's goals, you get taken aback by the power of his shot, and then you see his pace. Then you see his free kicks, and then we haven't even gone to the celebrations. So there's so much to be excited about that I think people have seen that. And yeah, it's all been carefully packaged, et cetera, to show off his best side. But it's such an engaging air about him. You know, there's an excitement about him on his face when he does things that I think is capturing people's attention. I think the big question now, of course, is how he responds to that and how he deals with it with all that hype, because that's the flip side to it, is that he goes over there now with a heightened level of expectation. But so far, he doesn't seem to be bothered by any of that.
And there were big clubs after him. There were over a dozen clubs that were genuinely into him, including some big Premier League clubs also. So that might also explain as to why, you know, this was very much a global story.
Shame for our video editor that he didn't have a commission for views in his contract, because certainly Nestori gave that quite a bump over the last week. I think millions upon millions of views on his highlight reel. And the one that, because I've watched it so many times now, the bit of commentary I really love is when he scores that knuckleball goal almost at Amy Park, and Robbie Thompson almost laughs as he's calling it, just in sheer joy and exasperation at the skill. Like, he hasn't really pulled that off, has he?
Oh, here's Aaron Kunda. He can't hit them. Does so. Oh, what a goal! Oh, the power, the dip, the flips, everything you want.
It's absolutely, it's a beautiful piece of commentary. All right, that's where it gets easy. Now let's get back into the weeds, gents, of this top five. The way it's going to work is we're going to revisit it each month and we're going to weight the positions from first to fifth with a scale of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and come up with the, you know, the player of the year of the next-gen tracker by the end of the season. I think if I take a pool of players that we're fairly unanimous on, Thomas Waddingham, Jaden Kucharski, Rafael Borges Rodriguez. Are you guys comfortable with four of the five players coming from that contingent? Tom, to you first.
Yeah, they've all made an impact this year. That's the thing. They've all not been overawed. They've all changed games. They've all given levels of excitement at different times. And they're all, they're not, there's not a sort of bias to one club or the other. There's, these are kids who come through the system, sometimes at one club and gone to another, as in Rafael, or they've come through the system at a club and you know, the fans love a local boy. So there's all sorts of reasons to be excited about that, and I can't see how anyone would disagree violently.
Yeah, broadly agree. I mean, I guess if you're looking at form right now, you know, Kucharski off the back of his brace last week, absolutely, you know, gets into the squad. Waddingham with the goal, you know, he's been very good, looked very lively. If you look at it over the course of the whole season, hasn't been a long season. I mean, Kucharski didn't get a heap of minutes early on in the piece, but, you know, he's absolutely red hot right now. But look, broadly speaking, they're absolutely in there, in the mix.
And Waddingham is only 18. I'm even include a bit of a bias towards the Australia Cup on it. And if you combine that with his return to the league, four goals in the cup, one in the league, an assist already, 18 years old, extremely promising signs. I'm probably going to nudge for him to be second on the list. Does anyone want to offer or anyone to throw in above that?
No, I agree, because apart from anything, he kind of has to succeed because Brisbane don't really have a plan B. And I know that's the one concern, that if something was to happen, or as they lose him to national, you know, national teams or whatever, they don't have much alternative. But so far, touch wood, the kid seems to be able to cope with that expectation. And he's got good movement. He's strong. I like the fact that the goal he scored last weekend, it was the ability to switch his feet and, you know, allow the ball to come across him and use the other foot. There's lots technically to like about him, but also he's just got that sense of being in the right place. And if we include the Australia Cup, he's made a big impact already this season. So again, I think his form and his output so far justifies that position.
Clutch goal in the Australia Cup, which shows you this kid has got the temperament in the biggest moments as well. That took the game into penalties, which was a key part of Sydney FC's run to the final. So by our maths, when we all voted just before this podcast, we've got Aaron Kundra in one, Waddingham in two, Kucharski in three. It's a late run to that because he only come into the lineup since, you know, in the last couple of games. Borges Rodriguez at four. He's been super impressive for MacArthur, Dave.
He has. Benefited from regular football, as we referenced earlier, started for the Oli Roos overnight and, you know, had a very, very good performance, was, you know, right in the mix with a couple of their goals. So, yeah, he's looked lively. He's quite versatile in that front third. Was at Melbourne City for quite a long time, the son of former Adelaide United striker Cristiano.
Love that.
But was just, yeah, you know, so far down the pecking order because you've got that stacked City attack of Socceroos, you know, Leckie and McLaren and Andrew Naboot and, you know, Berenguer was there at the time. So it was a very difficult squad to get into, but he's now a bona fide starter and he's looking very good.
257 minutes across the season so far, across the four games. So to put to our point earlier about Oli Roos and going in there playing, very, very positive. So we get to the fifth position and that's where there's a good little debate to have to find the last slot across a couple of players. A sport for options, but we've got Noah Boddick, we've got Yule, we've got Clayton Taylor, we've got Lino, we've got Moragas, we've got Ryan Teague. They are some of the options. They're the ones that were filtered across our lists. Do either of you want to make the passionate case for one of them guys to bring in with 1 point to round out the top five?
I'm going to say Johnny Yule at Adelaide. There's so much potential there and we're seeing more and more of it. He's trusted by, albeit, and he's someone so young, he's both feet. He can play through the lines. He can run with the ball. He can tackle. Really mature head on his shoulders. I just think his output this year is, and in previous seasons, he's he's such a star for the future.
I'll respectfully disagree, Tom, and I'll go with Ryan Teague from Melbourne Victory. He's been outstanding this season. He's taken that number six or number eight position. He's claimed it. I mean, he's got Johnny Warren medal winner, Jake Brimmer on the bench, the veteran Lee Broxham, who, you know, is still in very, very good nick. Even Ray Marchand, the Spanish midfielder, have been keeping those kinds of players out of the squad. Very elegant, great range of passing. And, yeah, last week scored a goal as well just to cap off his all-round game. So probably could be a little bit higher considering that consistency. I know we probably have a tendency to, you know, favour the rock stars, the goal scorers in that attacking third, but Ryan Teague has been phenomenal this season.
We might have to sort this one off the record afterwards, I reckon, because there's a good debate to be had here. I even wanted to make a case for Clayton Taylor at the Jets, who's scored a couple of great goals, but maybe the Hollywood moments might have caught my eye, and I do love a couple of those goals that he scored this season. I am going to be the defence splitting passer here, and I'm going to side on, when I do the maths here, I've got the Google sheet in front of us, and Ryan Teague just gets by a lock of that magnificent hair that he's got, because the maturity of his performance, the way he's held together in that experienced Victory side, we've spoken about him as a growing narrative of the season as well, so far this season on this podcast too. I think he gets the nod by the length of his hair, barely, because there's a magnificent case for Yule. There's a great case for Noah Boddick. There's a great case for Lino, who you voted for as well, Tom, from Melbourne Victory. So in conclusion, the positive is, could we have had such a positive discussion about this concept 3 or 4 years ago?
You might have struggled, to be fair. I mean, there was a time where, you know, you could count the under 21 players on, you know, one, maybe two hands in terms of playing regularly. So yeah, it's great for the A-Leagues, great for the fans, because fans do love seeing young players come through the ranks, and it's fantastic for our national team, Socceroos down.
I also would, I think Ryan Teague, it is a very, very strong case. What's really nice for me is that I've heard good things about him for years at Sydney FC. They talked highly of his maturity. The young Socceroos, people involved there did, I think I might have mentioned this before, but they're playing in a tournament in Indonesia for the under 17s. They beat Indonesia in the semi-final. The Indonesian players are all slumped on the ground. There's a big crowd. And Ryan Teague, who's the captain of the Joeys, went round and lifted them all up, picked them all up, shook their hands, told them, well, you know, be proud of themselves, etc. He's got that maturity, that sense of sees things beyond himself. So I think it's very pleasing to see him flourishing at the heart of Tony Popovich's midfield.
I think a good sign of a good list is when the notable omissions list is arguably as strong as the inclusion. So hopefully this sparks some good debate. The Next Gen Tracker, over the course of the season, we'll be monitoring it, and I'll be very interested to see who breaks into that list, maybe in February, March or April, who isn't on our radar right now. That's what we love about our league, and you never know. Now, gents, on Thursday, of course, the gang's back for the fantasy show, which will include a preview of the weekend, and there's a lot to still happen this week, so we're not going to go too into the weeds of it, but we will just have a quick look ahead at what's coming up. MacArthur against Melbourne Victory gets us back underway on Friday night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern. Saturday, it's a triple header, Wellington against Melbourne City. The action does start at 2:30 p.m. into the F3 Derby. Now, that is at Industry Group Stadium now at 5:30 p.m. It's been switched over to a Mariners home game. And then on Saturday night, the night concludes with the blockbuster, the Sydney Derby. Sydney FC hosting this one against Western Sydney at Allianz Stadium. Sunday, Brisbane against Perth at Suncorp, 3 p.m. That's the 10 bold slot. And the round concludes with Western United against Adelaide United at 5 p.m. Well, if there's a way to come back after the international break, it's throwing in an F3 derby and a Sydney derby and some informed teams going up against each other. This is a tantalising round, Dave. Where do we begin? What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, for me, it's the Sydney derby. That's the headliner of this round. You know, Wanderers are travelling really, really well. There was that fantastic. I mean, they had a couple of fantastic battles last season. Bit of drama on and off the field. Interestingly, Ufuk Tele has come in and, you know, had a barnstorming start to life at his old club, Sydney FC. Him and Mark Rudin, former Sydney FC teammates, part of that inaugural Sky Blue squad, that title-winning squad, and still remain on pretty good terms. Tele, of course, replaced Rudin over at Wellington Phoenix. So I think this will be a really intriguing, you know, tactical battle. I mean, it's a very different Sydney FC to what it was 2 weeks ago. So I'm sure, you know, planning from the Wanderers' point of view will have changed. So that's a headliner for me. And just broadly speaking, I'll be really interested to see how some of the squads shape up because, of course, the Oliroos and the Socceroos, again, in action in coming days. They're playing overseas, so players will be pretty late coming back into the fold. I don't expect, I mean, unless there's injuries, that players will be unavailable, but, you know, fatigue and jet lag, etc., could factor in. So we could see some big-name players perhaps coming off the bench in impact roles, and I'm sure we'll see some new faces and some new starters and potentially some new young faces over the weekend.
And I think there's a whole bunch of storylines. I mean, the derby, as you say, is the headline, but, like, you know, MacArthur were seconds away from beating Melbourne City. How do they bounce back in a home game? Do they build on that, or are they shell-shocked by it? There's the Mariners, you know, Mark Jackson under a, you know, struggling with in terms of results at the moment. And he's up against the legacy of what happened last season. So there's so many different storylines to pick up again. It's funny, you know, when you have international break, talking about this with my kids this morning, they're sort of simultaneously agog at the international action, but frustrated that the club action has to stop. But at least we get to pick it back up again now and talk about it all.
Indeed. And there are some informed teams. Brisbane against Perth on Sunday is one I'm also looking forward to. We get a look at A-League's All Access, by the way, gents, this week at the revolution or the evolution of Brisbane Roar, featuring the likes of Kaz Patafta, Zach Anderson and Chad Gibson. A look at how they are rebuilding the club there and ahead of a home game there against Perth, two teams who are very competitive this season. So there is much to look forward to, and including Adelaide United needing to bounce back against West United, who haven't scored in a couple of weeks too. So that game, I'm not going to say it's going to be a desperate game, but it's going to be a game where both teams are looking to prove a point too. So there is absolutely something on the line in every single one of these games. But it is Monday. There's a lot of water under the bridge to happen between now and the weekend, and the show on Thursday and aleagues.com.au is where you need to head to immerse yourself in all that ahead of the weekend. Well, that was fun, guys. That was a bit of a pick-me-up after no A-League action over the weekend. Good to see you both. Thanks for joining us.
Good on you, boys.
Always a pleasure.
Actually, a quick flag, of course. We are recording on Monday morning. Tom, you're off to the announcement at Leichhardt Oval on Monday of the National Second Division, so we can read all about that on Keep Up later on Monday or through the week as well.
And the Socceroos. There's loads. It's never stopped.
Well, you're not going to Q8 in the next hour, so I'm not going to give you that goodbye. Enjoy that, everyone. Enjoy all the football that's coming up, of course. Dub Zone, that podcast is out on the Dub Zone feed. If you missed the show on Sunday night, excellent stuff from Alicia Ferguson, Teresa Pelias, and the gang there dissecting what was a really, really big weekend in the Liberty A-League with Emily Van Egmond returning, but unfortunately Holly McNamara going down injured in a match-saving performance for her side. So we hope and have our fingers crossed it's a positive diagnosis for the Matildas call-up. Gents, thanks for your time today. To everyone listening, thank you for listening as always and for your support on the podcast. And until the next episode, enjoy your football.